Welcome everyone to Cabinet on Thursday, 18th of October. My name is Councillor Morgan. I'm chairing this Cabinet meeting, and welcome everyone, including members of the public, to this evening's session. So to start with, I'm just going to read out, this meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. In addition, under the Local Authorities Executive Arrangements, Meetings and Access to Information England Regulations 2012, other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any such images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. First item is item one, which is apologies. We have an apology, I think, from Councillor Mercer. Thank you. Item two, disclosure of pecuniary and personal interests. So if anyone has any items they wish to raise, please do. Councillor Rock.
So to declare a personal interest in item eight, two of my my firm's clients have responded to this consultation on the strategic growth plan, so I won't be taking part in the debate and I'll step out of the room for that. In addition to that, item 10, a client of my firm has objected during the consultation process to one of the sites. So again, I'll remove myself from the room whilst that takes place. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Councillor Smith.
Just to say the cemetery item, though it's not actually in my ward, it refers to Nan Panton. But I just want to make it clear that it is not in my ward.
It is indeed in Atwood's ward, which is a ward I represent. Just checking with Adrian whether there's anything at all. No, absolutely nothing that needs to be declared on that. Thank you very much for that, Margaret. In general, also to do with item eight, given it's an item that covers items for sort of partial input from the County Council, I'm asking Adrian, as monitoring officer, whether any County Councillors need to declare any interest on that one.
Leader, my advice would probably be that they should declare a personal interest, but it's only a personal interest because the Code of Conduct says that membership of another authority will not normally lead to any sort of further interest that could lead to bias.
I'll declare an interest in that, and Councillor Poland will, Councillor Taylor as well, and also Councillor Barclay. Okay, thank you very much. So item three is actually leader's announcement. I don't have any formal announcements other than to mention the very sad passing of Councillor Southington. I know all of us around this table have been very saddened to hear of John's passing. He was an exceptionally kind, generous man. One of those people that was always a pleasure to talk to, whether it's at meetings or elsewhere, had I think a lot of people I know in the Anstey area were very, very fond of John, and he will be missed. He attended the last council meeting here only a few weeks ago, and I managed to talk to him at the end of the meeting, and he wanted to catch up and just ask questions and how's your son and how's everything going, and it was precisely John, regardless of how unwell he felt, he always wanted to actually know how other people felt, and I think that was a mark of him as an individual, and I know he will all be missed, but hopefully we'll have an opportunity at the next council meeting to remember John in our own way. But very sad to his passing, and I know all our thoughts go to his partner and his family. His funeral, I know has been publicised and presented to all councillors, and hopefully as many as possible will actually attend his funeral to remember him there. If we can move on to item four, minutes of the previous meeting. Those for September 13th. Can I see those? First off, everyone's happy with the content and the accuracy, in which case, if I can see those in favour, everyone in favour. Thank you very much. And Laura, I have a signed copy here for you. Thank you. So, item five now, questions under Cabinet Procedure 10.7. So, a question has been asked by Councillor Hayes and a written answer has been provided. I'm just checking Councillor Hayes isn't here this evening to ask any follow-on questions. So, in which case, we'll move to item six, which is the call-in of Cabinet Decision, Environmental Services Contract. Consideration of this item is not necessary this evening, as the Scrutiny Management Board, at its meeting held on the 8th of October 2018, supported the decision taken by the Cabinet on 13th of September 2018 in relation to the Environmental Services Contract. So, in which case, we now pass to item seven. So, if I can invite Ian Orwin, who's the group accountant, to the table, and also if I can ask Councillor Barclay to introduce this report, and then to pass over to Ian to present any follow-on comments.
So, when this Syrian vulnerable persons resettlement grant, which we get in total from the Home Office, when we were budgeting in autumn 2017, we estimated an amount of $261,100 would be required. In actual fact, we only need $158,350. So as a result, all this money, it has no effect on our balances at all, because we're getting it all back from the Home Office. And much as I'd like to ask them for the original amount, I don't feel we can. We certainly do with an extra $100,000. So this is an adjustment to bring the total amount outstanding to nil. There was an original amount of $26,000 against the general budget, but that will be wiped off. And it is as straightforward as that. I will ask Ian if there is anything he would like to add.
Yes. Yeah, thanks. Well, not really, Chair. Well, I will add a few things, actually. We're presenting this tonight because of the Council's procedure rules, where money over payments of over £100,000 come to Cabinet rather than are sorted out either by Director or Head of Service, which is basically why it's here. When we did the budget originally, obviously everything was lumped more into one code because we didn't know what the split was at the time for the new people. But there's because we've got a new member of staff in the Vulnerable Person Resettlement Officer as well, we obviously had a better breakdown of that now. So hopefully it's quite straightforward to to prove it. It all comes from Home Office grants and so on. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Background papers were very clear on this, and thank you very much for the two of you for presenting those items. Are there any questions from Cabinet on any of the points in the paper or clarified on the presentations? I think it was probably pretty clear, wasn't it? Okay, yeah. That's great. Thank you very much, Ian. So can I ask Cabinet, Tom in particular, Councillor Barclay, to make a recommendation, and then I'll ask for a second.
So I'd like to make recommendation one on page one of the report, or page 13 of the pack, for the reasons to comply with 1.6 of the scheme of budget environment, where budget changes of more than 100,000 are taken to Cabinet for approval.
Councillor Harper-Davis.
Thank you, Leader. I'd like to second that item, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ian. I can move on to item eight now, which is the Leicester and Leicester Strategic Growth Plan. So if I can invite Richard Bennett to the table, who's Head of Planning and Regeneration, and also ask Councillor Vardy to introduce the report, and then pass over to Richard to present any remaining items.
Yes, thank you, Leader. Yes, the strategic growth plan before you today has been developed by a partnership made up of Leicester City and Leicestershire County Council and the seven local borough and district councils, plus the Leicester and Leicestershire Enterprise Partnership. It puts forward proposals for new housing and transport improvements that will be needed to attract jobs and investment into Leicester and Leicestershire from now until 2050. This plan has been agreed by the Members Advisory Group, which represents all the partners and, if agreed, will be used to help shape the local plans the city and district are preparing or are reviewing. Importantly, it will also be used to support bids for government funding to deliver the infrastructure needed to support growth. Our communities and stakeholders were invited to comment on the plan by taking part in a county-wide consultation. In total, 588 responses were received, 79% from members of the public. The comments received were analysed and considered during the preparation of the revised strategic growth plan before you today. The plan estimates that Leicester and Leicestershire needs 96,580 new houses and 367 to 423 hectares of employment land from 2011 to 2031. These homes have already been built, have planning permission, or already allocated to be built in adopted or emerging local plans. Beyond 2031, the plan identifies the need for a further 90,500 dwellings and additional employment land. Local plans will deal with the detailed allocation of sites to be brought forward for potential development. Major infrastructure would also be needed to allow for new growth. These include a new link road, the A46 Expressway, to the south and east of Leicester, connecting strategic highways to the west of the city with the M1. It's important to note that no decisions have been made about the exact route of this road, which will be subject to further and extensive consultation before going ahead. Rail improvements are also proposed too, to provide a better connectivity between the city, Coventry and Birmingham. This would relieve pressure along the M1 and more widely across the Midlands. I think it's extremely positive that 10 local partners have joined together to formulate and agree on a long-term plan for our city and county's future, focusing on key areas so that our city and county can grow and prosper. We need this plan because it will help us bid for national funding essential to support infrastructure improvements. We know that some of the proposals are controversial. They are not easy decisions. But we need to be strategic about how we manage future growth so that it's focused, sustainable and of benefit to the people who live and work here. So there's a great deal of detail in this plan, and so I'll hand over to Richard to shape some of that out for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Vardy, and through you, Leader. Councillor Vardy has given a very thorough overview of the strategic growth plan. There's a few points, I think, which are worthwhile highlighting for the benefit of Cabinet members. The needs of the area, the housing needs of the wider Leicester and Leicestershire area have actually been met up to 2031 by the arrangements in the plan and through the commitments and allocations in emerging local plans. So Charnwood isn't required to pick up any unmet need from partners up to 2031, and indeed post-2031 Charnwood is only expected to meet its own needs moving forward. So the plan in that sense provides some comfort, I think, to residents of Charnwood who in the past have had to accommodate a significant amount of growth through previous regional spatial strategies and meeting the need from the city. So this time around, Charnwood is not expected to accommodate any unmet needs. And the plan has been prepared following a statutory process, although it's not a statutory plan in itself. So from that, members can be assured that a rigorous process has been followed, and indeed the report before you does highlight that it's been subject to sustainability appraisal and also an equalities and human rights impact assessment as well, and they're part of the background papers. Go on to say that the major areas of growth, as Councillor Vardy alluded to, are set out in the report. It's paragraph 2.8, page 21. So the main focus for growth is obviously Leicester City, around the A46 growth corridor, what's called the Leicestershire International Gateway, which is the area around the strategic rail freight interchange in the northern part of the borough, around the Colville area. The A5 improvement corridor and Melton Mowbray. So Loughborough and a number of the other market towns are identified as being areas where growth will be managed in local plans, recognising the scale of growth that those places have had up until now, and areas where that growth needs to be consolidated and allowed to bed in before any further growth is considered. So that's the plan in a nutshell. It's worth just reminding members that the plan, as I said, has followed a rigorous process, and there has been a high degree of engagement of the elected representatives in Charnwood. We did quite a few technical briefings for ward councillors. Consultation period for the plan itself, which ran in the new year for a 17-week period, which is one of the longest consultation periods I can remember for some time. And it did elicit a high volume of response, nearly 600 responses, 80% of which were from members of the public. So very good response from that. Details of the comments made by people to the plan and the partners' response to that are available in the background papers. And the changes that were made to the plan are contained in the Appendix B to the report in front of you. So Cabinet are invited to consider the growth plan this evening and whether to recommend to Council that it be approved, along with giving authority to the Chief Executive to make any minor amendments that might be necessary, provided they don't change the sense of the policy that's set out in that document, in consultation with, with the Leader and the Joint Strategic Planning Manager. That's the report, Leader. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much for that, Richard, and also thank you very much for Councillor Vardy's introduction as well. I appreciate that this is an item that's been discussed very, very thoroughly, as you mentioned, both at briefings, but also it's previously come to full council and has also previously come to this committee as well, and will still have to go to full council for their final say in November if we take a decision tonight. So if anyone has any particular questions, by all means do. Councillor Barclay.
Yeah, I appreciate that the A46 expressway is not going to be developed, as far as I understand it, till after 2031, because we have enough housing at the moment. There are some people who have expressed concerns, as I know the route is yet undefined. There will be more consultation before that is defined and funding for the actual roadway. The mix of do we get the houses or the roads first? I think people are, you know, even at this stage, people are concerned that it's going to plough up areas of the countryside. And I, as I say, I stress, I know it's still 2031, but people are coming forward and saying, well, you know, what's this? What, you know, they've had 17 weeks consultation. I accept that, but there will be another period of consultation before it goes ahead.
Through you, Leader. Yes, yes, there will. The idea is that the proposals in the strategic growth plan will be taken forward by the individual local authorities, the partner authorities, through their new local plans. So the various different districts will be bringing forward replacement to their local plans and will be starting to think about the post-2031 period in those plans. So the proposals for growth in the area of the A46 corridor will need to be tested through that process. It's very important that any proposals that come forward are supported by the requisite infrastructure funding from government where that's necessary, and there's a process that's been going through at the moment in discussion with government about what the commitment could be towards those proposals moving forward.
Thank you very much. Any further questions? Thank you very much for that, Richard, and also thank you for question, Councillor Barclay. So in which case, can I ask Councillor Vardy to make a proposition and then I'll ask for a second?
Yes, thank you. Just before I do that, just picking up on Councillor Barclay's point, and I think it's a very valid and well-made point, about concerns on this distributor road, this expressway that's in the document. I think the biggest issues are going to be is where this fund is going to come from, because certainly development will not on its own provide enough means to develop a road of this magnitude. So I do think there is that and there is this concern. But this is going forward. As you know, throughout the whole of this process, and I said so in my opening moments, that you know, we've been out for consultation. We've consulted on this on a number of little ways. And this, any road such of this size would certainly be subject to a lot of consultation, a lot of research, etc. Also, I think that the key thing for this is the whole of this exercise is that Leicester and Leicestershire are doing something new. We can't go on managing our building in isolation, which has been the historic way forward since time immemorial, I suspect. Now we're looking at different ways of doing it, and this is the important thing. Charnwood is not an island. We need to see how it works with our partners across the county and indeed surrounding counties as well. So with that in mind, I'd like to propose the recommendations on front page for the report, 1 and 2, for the reasons given on the same page.
Thank you very much, Councillor Vardy. Can I ask Councillor Boker to second?
Yes, Leader, I'd like to second that.
Thank you very much. Can we see those in favour? All of those in favour. Thank you very much. Can somebody ask Councillor Rawlings to come back in? That'd be fantastic. Thank you very much, Richard. Now I'm going to move on to item 9, which is the Revenues and Benefits Service Future Options. I know this received an overview and scrutiny group report as well. So if I could ask Councillor Cableton to the table. And whilst you're joining us, John, can I ask Councillor Harper-Davis to introduce the item? And then if you could ask Councillor Cableton to present the OSG report.
Thank you, Leader. In 2009, the Council, Charnwood Borough Council, agreed to outsource its benefits, revenues and business rates to Capita, LGS, for an initial period of 10 years. This was effective from February 2010, and this contract has the option for an extension period of an extra 5 years to 2020. As we are nearing the end of the current contract period, it's appropriate to consider the options that are available to the Council for the future delivery of these services. As you can see in the papers and in the broadest terms, there are 4 feasible options that are available for our consideration, and these are set out in the report. The options are, 1, bring the currently outsourced service back in-house. 2, seek out a shared service agreement with local authorities. 3, extend the existing contract for a maximum of a further 5 years. And 4, which is re-procure an outsourced agreement arrangement for the provision of the revenues and benefits services. The paper this evening is actually just looking for us to approve the options 2 and 3, as these carry them at the lowest risk to Charnwood Borough Council. And Councillor Cableton, would you like to give OSG report, please? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good evening. Yes, Cabinet's being asked to endorse the development of options 2 and 3 to be investigated and costed in detail to reach a final decision for the provision. The OSG consider these options, these two options, to be the most practical of the 4 for the following reasons. First of all, option 1, bringing the service back in-house, is very expensive and very risky. And it sort of really goes against the current trend in developing sole computer systems for sole use. involves the purchase and development of such complex systems, and it involves much risk and is vulnerable to changing nature of welfare benefits. Option two, seeking a shared service with the local authorities. This is considered a realistic possibility, as already a shared service has been operating in Leicestershire for a number of years, and it may be possible for Charnwood Borough Council to join. This would spread the work and give more resilience. It would also make us quite a bigger partner in the service. Option three is to extend the current contract. Although there are some problems with the present contract, the existing contract has served us well since 2010. This option presents the lowest risk and the lowest additional cost. The supplier has much experience in providing the service and appears to be able to react to change in the specification. There is some concern over the current provider's finances, although these are understood to have improved of late. Option four is to seek a new supplier. This is considered to be a complicated and risky operation. It might be necessary to come to replace the existing system, but it would involve investigating and evaluating the systems on the market, and the capital cost to purchase a new one and will be significant. Currently, there are very few companies on the market that offer the required software services. So the OSG would like to, draw Cabinet some attention to the risky nature of the task of providing benefits, whichever option we choose. It's vulnerable to changes in specifications from central government, to the complications of universal benefits as it comes along, and the possible future changes to the structure of local government. The OSG therefore considers that participation with others, either through a shared service or a commercial operation, would represent the least amount of risk, and therefore recommends that Cabinet endorse the select of options 2 and 3 for further investigations.
Thank you very much. John, that's food for thought for all of us. Thank you very much. Can I ask first for Cabinet any points of clarification or further information that anyone would wish to ask Councillor Capleton? Thank you very much. Right. So we have Kerry Barshaw, who's joined us at the table, who's head of customer experience. If I could ask you to present the remainder of the report, and then we can ask you some questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Leader. I think, obviously, both Councillor Lee Harper-Davis has given a good overview at the start, and we've obviously gone into the details of the different options that are already available. So I think what I'll just try and add to that, if that's okay, is some of the more detailed reasoning behind how we've reached the conclusion to make recommendations for option 2 and 3. In terms of seeking out shared service arrangement with other local authority, there is already the Leicestershire partnership that's been in place for a number of years and is operating very successfully, which makes this a very attractive option. They currently use the same IT systems as we already have, which gives us the opportunity to benefit from economies of scale in terms of the systems, as well as already having a governance and management structure in place as well, which gives further opportunities. Their performance levels are very attractive. In fact, some of their performance levels are above our own, so that obviously gives us something to aspire to in terms of generating further income, bringing in income through council tax. In terms of risks, these are relatively low, although there will be some risk associated with moving from our current arrangement. It's deemed that this would be minimal over that period. They have expressed an interest with us, that they would be interested in partnering with us. And as we've mentioned, actually we've become quite a large partner as part of that partnership arrangement. There are obviously differences in terms of it's a non-commercial contract. They won't be looking for profit in terms of this. They are looking at how they can invest in services to improve services. So there is a difference in terms of that type of relationship, but also goes that with governance. We're talking about a number of organisations working together to deliver the service. In terms of extending the current contract for up to 5 years, it doesn't have to be 5 years. It can be anything up to 5 years. Then obviously this presents the easiest option in terms of continuity of service. However, that on its own is not a reason to do that. As we've mentioned, Capita have had some performance issues which have now been addressed, and I'm pleased to be able to report since the beginning of October they have made a 70% increase in terms of their productivity, bringing down waiting times and reducing the paper that's in the queue for processing. And they've done that at their own cost. There's been no further investment required from us. So they have certainly taken on board what we've said, and they have shown their interest in working with us in the future. They have now also invested further in the service in terms of our digital agenda, and we've recently brought more services online through their new procurement. We've also recently had a report only this week in terms of their financial stability, and the fact they are now rated as stable, whereas previously there have been profit warnings. So that's a positive. I think overall, in terms of the issues with looking at the future of this contract, is the uncertainty around universal credit. Only this week we've had a further announcement that there's been a further delay in the rollout of universal credit by another year, taking it to 2023. We're already around 7 or 8 years behind where we should be, and that makes it very difficult to predict where the service is going to be. Considering the current contract runs out in 2020, that's obviously only 3 years before then. The value in terms of that service moving over is about a third of the contract and 60% of our claimants. So it is a significant reduction in work to the council, which makes it very difficult to predict what the service should look like and how we would be able to make that flexible should we bring a service such as that in-house. We could face additional redundancy charges, etc. So in terms of the two options that we'd like to pursue, the information and the research that we've done would indicate these would provide a continuity of service. They will operate in the best interests of the council. They will lower the risk to the organisation, and they will provide a cost-effective solution for the future. Open to any questions.
Thank you very much for that, Kerry. Very good summary, and obviously an item that I think all of us over the years have discussed a great deal about the way that we actually provide our services, and certainly I think the distillation of the four options into options two and three are quite interesting, because I think options one and two are of public nature, whereas options three and four are clearly of private nature in the sense of contracting out, whereas options one and two are related to actually bringing services back in. And I think as a result, actually distilling those down into actually looking at just options two and three, I think makes sense, because they are effectively the sort of two best examples of two of those options. Can I ask you, before opening up to general questions, can I ask you also about option three, which is related obviously to the extension of the existing contract? I'm aware, of course, that we're not the only authority that's actually looking at the rollout programme for universal credit, and the fact that it's a huge, as you touched on, it's a huge impact on our service provision. And as a result, we are looking effectively to what comes after those changes, because actually it's a very different type of provision that we have to make as an authority. And I'm assuming that many other authorities are in a position at the moment where their contracts are coming to an end. They're looking to actually go back out possibly to the market to actually see if they can procure those services maybe for another few years until universal credit has finally determined itself. And I was just wondering, have we got examples of other authorities, the way that they've actually done that, where they've decided to actually carry on using the private sector to actually provide some of those services and provisions?
So, yeah, I have looked at what's happening in the market. What I actually did is looked at, over the last 4 years, what is happening in the market in terms of going out for outsourcing. And through the OGU process, so the Official Journal for European Union, there was actually only three tenders in the last 4 years going out. But one of those, which was quite interesting, was around the service being provided in-house, but them outsourcing any overflow. So if once they reach capacity, then they would look to have that service available to outsource. And from what I have been able to find out about that, that's predominantly around being able to protect their core staff and not growing their service to have additional staff in order to deal with the current demand, which will obviously change in the future. One of the other councils that went out then actually didn't award a tender at all, and they're looking at alternative ways of delivering the service. And the final one has gone out for a full re-procurement of the service, and they have awarded that contract. But generally what a lot of people seem to be doing with existing contracts is extending. They have, as we do, this option to extend, and they seem to be doing extensions. So London Borough of Hounslow, they extended their contract in 2017, along with another other organisations. I'm just trying to remember the other London one. Westminster have just extended theirs with Capita as well. And that seems to be a pattern in some terms because of this uncertainty, that actually it's easier to stick with what's in place. Because somebody such as Capita obviously has the resilience of sites across the whole of the UK where they can deal with the flexibility of staffing, whether at some points whether it needs to go up for a short period of time, as we're seeing actually at the moment, and then when it will change. So they have that greater flexibility and resilience than we do. So there seems to be a pattern where people are unsure. Speaking to some of the local authorities that have the service in-house, what they're having to do a lot of the time is not fill vacancies on permanent basis, but use agency and temporary contracts over a number of years, which is actually proving very difficult and in some cases quite costly to deliver the service.
Thank you very much for that. Councillor Barclay.
First of all, a comment really. Thank you for a really well thought out presentation, and clearly you've thought of everything. I mean, we talked about a 60% reduction in the volume of work coming through once it goes out, and universal credit is fully embedded. And I think it was the question that I had, which you've pretty much answered, but it tends to steer towards using the extending the contract would certainly put all the risk with Capita, whereas with the partnership, if they have to reduce their staff by 60% because the volume of work has decreased by 60%, that could have a major impact on their ability to provide it. What would you say to that?
Through you, Leader. One of the benefits actually with the partner is the partnership is obviously they have their staffing structure in place. One of the things I've talked about with them is they may not actually need to take on that many more staff because we know that that's going to decrease. They may be able to use their existing resources in order to pick up the additional demand from ourselves, and so that will reduce any risk. They also have a very flexible team in the way that they work. So they have home working, they work over a 7-day period, not just over a 5-day period. So they have a greater way of being able to flex the resources that they have to meet the changing demand. So from conversations that I've had prior to Cabinet meeting today, they're confident that they can flex by not necessarily needing to take on the same level of resource that we may need today by spreading it over there, the other authorities within the partnership.
Thank you very much. Councillor Taylor.
Thank you, Leader. I probably don't know enough about universal credit, but I'm getting the drift that we'd need less staff to manage that once we're fully transferred over. Have we got any data from the areas that first went to universal credit and what impact that's had on there? Benefit services, do we have any of that?
There is lots of information, and yes, it is expected. So by 2023, the expectation is all new claims for housing benefit will be dealt with by universal credit. So as we've said, that's a large proportion, 60% of our claimants. Initially, actually, the findings are work increases, and that's because of the amount of paperwork that's generated by DWP that then comes back to us. Because, of course, we still have council tax support, so we will still administer the benefit that deals with council tax. And at the moment, the demand is increasing. As the service changes and fully embeds, then we expect the workloads to decrease by the numbers that I've mentioned. So 60% of our claimants should move on. After 2023, it is then expected that they will look at people of pensionable age. So at the moment, it's just working age. And we'll all go through that. However, we know at the moment there are difficulties. So, for example, families with more than two children, the system doesn't cater for them, so they're still having to come to us. If you are in temporary accommodation or supported accommodation, the system hasn't been developed to be able to deal with those circumstances. So at the moment, the local authority is left dealing with those, and we don't have a response from the Department for Worker Pensions as to how they will deal with it. So it doesn't give us that certainty as to everybody's going to go over. At the moment, majority of people will go over, but where things are complicated or difficult, at the moment they're being left with the local authority to continue to deal with. So that makes it difficult to answer your question exactly, because we're too early in the stage to really understand the different. It was only November that we understood that these family of three or with three children or more, etc., would not be going over at this stage, and they can't give us any time frame for when they will.
So just one last question, if I may, Lee. Just the first area that obviously went to Universal Credit, are they fully over now then, or is they are still being left with residual claimants?
So the announcement that was made this week was the delay of everybody that is on current housing benefit being transitioned over onto Universal Credit. So all that is live across the whole of the UK at the moment is new claims for working age people outside of the circumstances I'm saying. All of our existing caseload is staying with us, and we now have got to wait another year before we'll even get a plan as to when they might start to transition into Universal Credit. And that's what should be done by 2023.
Councillor Poland and then Councillor Smith.
Thank you, Leader, and thank you all for your very in-depth presentations. It's very, very interesting. Just picking up really on a comment you just made in your last answer, if that's all right, Carey. I know that in the government have talked about delaying, obviously, the rollout of this till 2023, 5 years at the moment. Who knows what will happen sort of going forward. And you mentioned then that there's going to be looking at rolling it out then sort of at the other end of the spectrum with pensioners. I'm getting the sense this won't be done and dusted in 5 years. And in that case, obviously, even if we gave a five-year extension, we'll be sitting here in 4 years or however many years with essentially a similar set of options, I guess. And we may not have any more certainty at that point. Is that a fair comment, or do you think it's more likely than not, without putting you on the spot, that in four or 5 years we'd have a more certain understanding of what we're dealing with and how, particularly how long we'll be dealing with that?
Through you, Leader. That's difficult for me to predict the DWP. So the date of 2023 is for working age people to have all moved over to Universal Credit. I have to have some hope that that will happen because that's what government have said they're going to do. So I will go with that for now and will hope. There will then be a secondary plan for moving people of pensionable age over, but yet there's been no discussion or any detail at all. Just originally that was going to be looked at from 2022, so we now know it will definitely be after that stage. By then it will be a smaller portion of our service that will be going over. But we really don't know what that will look like. We know what that looks like in terms of what our pensionable age customers are today, but in another 5 years' time, that could change, that could increase. They may make the decision not to move pensionable age people over to the service. I think as far as we can look really is 2023, and we'll have to see how that emerges over the coming years. Okay.
Margaret.
Councillor Smilowitz. Thank you for all of that detail. I must admit, page 64 did make for some uncomfortable reading. If we were to extend to the 5 years, who will actually be monitoring and how often in that 5 years?
Monitoring the performance of the contract. So as it is today, that's myself as head of service, and I have a contract monitoring officer as well. And we monitor their performance on a daily basis. So we check the accuracy of the work that's going through. So any benefit claims, for example, that's processed, we check that. And there's a target that has to be monitored about. And I have then monthly reports that come through. I discuss those with my lead member, who's obviously in charge of major contracts. And I have regular meetings with the contractor as well. So much as I do today, well, I would expect to monitor the contract in exactly the same way. However, one of the things that we have looked at doing is obviously improving some of the performance measures to make sure that we can manage that performance effectively in the future.
Okay, so no further questions. So thank you very much for that, Gary. And thank you for all the questions asked. Can I ask Councillor Harper-Davis to make a proposition, and then I'll call for a seconder.
Thank you. Can I just say, Leader, thank you to Carrie. She came up from a holiday today to pick Cabinet this evening. And it was overseas. So, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Right, thank you. So the recommendation for Cabinet this evening is that we endorse the development of options 2 and 3, as set out in Part B of our report, into detailed and costed proposals to present to Cabinet for a final decision on the future provision of revenues and benefits service. And the reasons are to allow resources to be focused on a defined set of preferred future service delivery options. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I ask Councillor Rawlings to second?
Thank you, Lydia. Yes, I'd be very happy to second this.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Gary. And enjoy the rest of your holiday. I only feel slightly guilty now. Okay, we're now on to item 10, which is the last item on the agenda this evening, which is the future cemetery provision for Loughborough. We also have an overview and scrutiny report on this item, so if I can invite Councillor Capleton to the table. And perhaps I can ask Councillor Boker to introduce the item and then pass over to John so he can present the report from overview and scrutiny. Thank you.
Thank you, Leader. The Council has looked at options to increase burial provision in Loughborough as the existing cemetery is expected to reach capacity within 4 years. To note, the Council does not have to provide burial spaces but believes it's the right thing to do for the borough. Alternatively, the Council could look to find a commercial operator or do nothing, leaving the prospect that Loughborough families will have to bury loved ones outside of the town. As a result, the Council has investigated a number of possibilities where we own the land, and that's very important to emphasise, and have identified three viable options which will provide burial space cost effectively for many years to come. The three options are Allendale Road, part of Shelthorpe Golf Course on Poplar Road, and some agricultural land on Nampanton Road in the Outwoods. Other options have been considered and investigated, but discounted for a number of reasons. These included agricultural land off Shepshed Road, Hathern, a number of allotment sites within Loughborough that the council own, three sports grounds, which are maintained by the council, and the A6 corridor, following suggestions that this could be potential for burial, and other agricultural land within Loughborough itself. The council then held a consultation between August the 8th and September the 23rd, 2018. There was an incredible amount of responses, over 700 responses, and there were very positive comments about one particular site. Councillors then considered a number of factors, including the costs, the technical aspects of developing each site, because, of course, we have to go down 3 metres, the consultation responses and other factors before making a decision on a preferred option. I'd like to hand over to scrutiny now to give their, which we reported to this week, to give their report.
Thank you. Yes, the site at Nampanton is being proposed for the development of a new cemetery in Loughborough. The OHG examines proposal and considered this to be the most sensible option for the following reasons. The original site that was chosen was Allendale Road. That led to a fair amount of public opposition. The matter was called in, and this is the re-examination of the situation. The public consultation following the call-in revealed that 50% of those who responded to the survey endorsed the Nampanton site and rejected the Allendale Road and Shelthorpe sites. They rejected them with large majorities. About 900 surveys were sent out and 725 were returned. All the proposed sites were assessed by the Cemetery Development Services and carrying some risks because of the expected volume of burials. However, the Namenpanton site was assessed as being the lower risk than the other two. The site at Namenpanton seems very sensible. It's in a tranquil location with easy access. It doesn't involve the loss of any recreational land and has potential lifespan of 276 years. The overview scrutiny group therefore recommends the Cabinet accept the proposal and approve the Namenpanton site for the new Loughborough Cemetery. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Capleton. Does anyone have any questions of accuracy or further information from John before he steps aside? And Councillor, if you could pass on my thanks to the other members of your scrutiny committee for the work they carried out this week. Both reports extremely good. Thank you very much. Thank you. If I can ask for Chris Trail, who's the Strategic Director of Neighbourhoods and Community Wellbeing, and also Matthew Bradford, who's the Head of Cleansing and Open Spaces, to come to the table. And if you could present the remainder of the report, that would be great, and then we can ask some more questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Leader. It's been approximately 12 months since this item was considered before, and officers were asked to go away and look at the shortlisted options that had been presented previously and consider other options for potential burial space, and we've been doing that over the last 12-month period. The first thing that I'd like to say is that we conducted Tier 2 environment assessments on the four sites that we had initially identified, those being Allendale Road, Shelthorpe Golf Course, Namenpanton Agricultural Land and the agricultural land at Hathern. And all of those sites from a technical point of view were acceptable as burial spaces. The project board looked at the information that we'd got and took those technical assessments and considered a wide range of other options as well and the situation of the particular sites. And it was decided at quite an early stage that the agricultural land at Hathern would be dropped as an option for a number of reasons, one being access difficulties. The site is quite landlocked and we'd need to negotiate access with a third party to obtain access into the site. The Hathern site had poor transport links, a reasonably steep gradient and high development costs. So at an early stage we discounted that option and took the other three options forward to the public consultation. The public consultation took place in August and September. We wrote to about 900 residents that were in close proximity to the three proposed sites, and we had a response of over 700 responses from those residents, but there was an open response from anybody. Anybody that wanted to respond could, and that public consultation showed that 72% of people that responded to the consultation either agreed or strongly agreed that Namenpanton was a good site for a cemetery, whereas Allendale was 23% that agreed or strongly agreed, and the golf course was 14% agreed and strongly agreed. So we got some quite useful feedback from conducting that public consultation exercise. In addition to that, we received a petition regarding the golf course, whereas 538 signatories stated their objection to developing part of the golf course for a cemetery site. We also consulted the Loughborough Area Committee and took those views on board. So it came down to a choice of priorities, and the project board decided that Namenpanton was the preferred site that they'd like to take forward for a number of reasons, those being the longevity of the site, so it does have a longer lifespan. It was felt that this site had a reduced impact on residential properties, with it being in the situation next to the sports ground and farmland. There was no loss of public recreation facilities by developing that particular site. The location is quite tranquil, peaceful, and it was heavily favoured by those people that were consulted over the options. In contrast, it was felt that Allendale had low levels of public support from the consultation exercise. It was considered to be a short-term option that would be quite quick to develop and get operating as a cemetery, but would only provide a limited lifespan. There was a loss of perceived recreational space amongst members of the community, and there are a number of other legal issues around that site. Again, with the golf course, it had low levels of public support, lower burial capacity, and a loss of a valuable local amenity. So we decided that Nampanton Road was the site that we wanted to take forward. Just to point out that we have already got the money in the existing capital plan, and that is sufficient to develop the site according to our initial estimates of development. And the next stages will be to seek the appropriate approvals from planning and from the Environment Agency in order to take the construction of the site forward if this recommendation is accepted. That's all, but I'd just like to say that there is actually a typo on page one of the report, and I'd like to point that out and apologise for it if I may. At the bottom of page 62, it said that the Scrutiny Management Board was held on the 14th of November 2018. It was actually 2017, so slight that correction to be noted.
We all note it back.
Thank you. I'm happy to take any questions.
I think also on page 63, I think it's a similar typo, isn't there? Is that right? 68, sorry. Okay, 68, 69. I was going to say, I think we can probably all remember the scrutiny meeting being held in 2017. So yes, completely take that. Can I perhaps open up a question? I know Councillor Smithers would like to ask a question as well. Clearly, as a consultation exercise. Actually, also through the Loughborough Echo, and I know through social media, there has been a huge amount of interest, certainly over the last 12 months or more, about where the cemetery should be. And a lot of people have been quite rightly very vocal about their thoughts about good sites and bad sites. And I know you've done a huge amount of work. Going through trying to assess some of the sites that members of the public have put forward and other councillors have put forward. There are quite strict, and in the report you outline it, and I know Councillor Boker mentioned in her introduction about, for instance, digging down 3 metres to assess groundwater, etc. And clearly in Loughborough, a huge amount of Loughborough sits on a floodplain. And we know that from development elsewhere that quite often that's a reason why certain areas can't be developed. And I know some of the sites that people have put forward quite firmly are actually those sites that can no longer qualify for cemetery provision. They may have done 100 years ago, but they wouldn't do now because of the flooding and the fact that water tables have actually risen over that period as well. So clearly the assessment of all of those sites has been quite thorough. And from those that were listed, I can see there's been a fair number that have been ruled out through those investigations. There has also been discussion, I think, from some sources about why would we not just buy a piece of land? And I know that's also been investigated, and certain areas have been looked at, and quotations or valuations have been obtained. I think the comment about the number of burials per year is obviously a lot lower than I think a lot of people had actually assumed. Obviously, crematorium, I think, probably takes up a large number of those burials, but clearly also elsewhere as well, natural burial grounds and all sorts of other areas. So the cost of actually burying people, I mean, certainly Councillor Boker mentioned to start off with about the statutory requirements for cemetery provision, and there are some private cemeteries that exist in the UK, but from all accounts, the cemetery charges associated with some of those are actually quite extortionate. And I think as a borough, it's the responsible thing, as many of the parishes around the borough equally do, is actually make provision for burial plots within their area. And I think that's probably, as a borough, that's the right thing for us to do. But at the same time, we also have to make sure it's affordable for people, because often burials are highly emotional periods in people's lives, and the last thing they need is somebody to present them with a huge bill at the end of it for costs that they least need to think about. So this is a very important decision for us as an authority, I think, particularly for Loughborough, because we clearly are in a position where we need to make a decision, and it has to be the right decision for the future of the town and for the future of its residents. But I can quite understand why residents that live near all three sites would have concerns, because it's change from the existing those existing areas. But I think for this committee and this council, it's important that the decision we make is for the long term rather than just the short term. It would be too easy just to make a decision this year and to actually have to force our colleagues 20 years down the road to come back and actually make another decision, because we haven't actually made the right decision now. So really just, that's really just my opening thoughts, and it's not really a question, but I know plenty of other people have other questions. So, Councillor Smilovich, if you can ask your question.
I do know how much work's been undertaken on this, and thank you for answering a question earlier this week on the amount of publicity that was undertaken. I don't think the public would realise quite how much and for how long it's been going on, so I appreciated the answer. I certainly know the Shelthorpe Golf Course is used by people other than just in Shelthorpe, so it's quite an important environment for local people to go to. I was always worried about the short-term approach, and that in 5 or 6 years we'd be scrabbling around trying to find another piece of land. So the long-term impact, I'm very pleased. The only thing that I suppose I was a bit bemused about was a point made about good public transport links. It's something that's rather hitting the press in Nampanton area at the moment because of county reducing bus services. So that was just one that intrigued me a little bit, and I thought maybe you knew something I didn't about bus services.
Thank you. If I can respond, Chair. Our initial assessment with the consultants looked at public transport links to all of the three sites, and the site at Nampanton Rose was considered to have substantially better public transport than the one at Haddon, for example. It is slightly out of the town centre, but it was considered to be served by public transport, and therefore it scored reasonably well. Obviously, any assessment that is undertaken is that particular picture at a snapshot in time, and things change over time. But it is looking at the sites, it is reasonably close to the town centre and reasonably accessible for people.
Yes, thank you. Yes, first of all, just to applaud you for the level of consultation that's taken place during the whole of the research into the suitability of site. And I think that it was necessary, and I think that if you adopted a very pragmatic approach to it, evidence-led, and I'm pleased that you're there where you are now. One question, and this is, I think the leader actually alluded, mentioned it for certain, is that there's a slow but growing movement towards natural burial sites, which can be aesthetically and environmentally pleasing to people nearby, to the residents, as well as people visiting the sites and to remember as a memorial event, so to speak, going back to them. Are there any thoughts, or is this too early days yet, for a natural burial ground within this cemetery complex?
Through you, leader. Well, we're a little bit early in the process, really. I think the next stage for us is to seek the appropriate planning and environment agency approvals before we look at specific designs and layout of the cemetery. But certainly natural burial is something that we could consider. The site at Nanpantan is of sufficient site to have to offer a range of different types of burial for people in the local area, whereas perhaps some of the other smaller sites we wouldn't be able to do that. We'd have much more restriction. I think it is about choice for the residents and the residents' families, whether they like a more formal burial setting or something a little less formal or natural, and hopefully that's something that we can accommodate.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions anyone wishes to ask? Can I ask... Yes.
Yes, Councillor Smedowitz again. Just to point out, in case people don't know, there is a natural burial ground just outside of Loughborough itself.
Can I ask one further question? I appreciate a lot of people would be concerned about screening, not necessarily feeling uncomfortable about looking at cemeteries. And I know it's a point that had been raised by many residents 12 months ago about Allendale, and like through the consultation process had been raised by many residents to do with the golf course, Shelthorpe golf course side as well. And I made a point, and I'm sure many other cabinet members probably have as well, of actually walking around each of those sites to actually get a feel for what we're going to be talking about this evening. And obviously the site at behind the playing fields, I know better because it is in my ward, and I've walked around the perimeter, and it is visible from some houses. I mean, that's absolutely true, but actually not as visible from most houses as the other two sites. I'm hoping that it's possible probably to actually mitigate some of the sort of visibility simply because the site is so large that it wouldn't need the cemetery to be extended all the way to the perimeter of the whole site that is in the council's ownership. And I just really ask whether you could actually talk about that.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, screening is quite an important issue for residents. We acknowledge that, and the site is overlooked by a small number of residential properties. So we would look to put the appropriate screening in that corner of the site to prevent residents overlooking the cemetery, if you like. Also, I think it's worth noting that I think it's highly probable that we would start, as you enter the site, on the right-hand side at the bottom and extend outwards. We would only develop a hectare at a time as we needed it, so any planting that we did early on would be mature by the time that we were using those parts of the site, so that hopefully residents would have that screening that they desire.
You mentioned about a hectare. We've talked about previously 50 to 60 burials per year. So roughly how many burials would take place within a hectare to actually get a rough idea of?
I think it's about 1,800 burials per hectare. Is it? Yes. Yeah. So any screening that we put in would be very established by the time that we started to bury people on those parts of the sites that are overlooked by residents.
Thank you. In that case, can I ask Councillor Boker to make a proposition, and then I'll call for a seconder.
Thank you, Leader. Before I do that, can I personally thank Matthew for the excellent work that he's put in over the last year, and the amount of assessment and criteria that he's looked at in preparing this report. And the recommendations are on page 68 that land at Nanpantan is approved as the location of the site to be developed as a new cemetery, subject to approval by the Environment Agency and planning permission being obtained. 2, to approve the revision of the capital programme for the cemetery development project to allocate $60,000 of capital funding for 2018-19 to enable the commencement of pre-development surveys and assessments and £590,000 for construction development to 2020-21 for the reasons outlined in numbers 1 and 2.
Thank you very much. Can I ask Councillor Poland to second?
Thank you, Leader. Yes, indeed, I'd like to second this.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Matt. And that concludes all the items for this evening. Thank you very much for all of those who attended. Thank you very much for public as well. And the next cabinet meeting is in 6 weeks' time.